This is Street Knowledge with Chris Graham.
Welcome to the podcast, and this is a fun one. Chris Graham, Scott German, Virginia 65, Duke 63. It happened. And actually, a lot happened that, Scott, you and I had predicted would happen yesterday when we did our podcast. But, you know, we can worry about the foul discrepancy. Isaiah Wilkins getting four cheapies in 14 minutes. And, boy, two front-end, one-and-one misses by 90% foul shooters and all that. So we can worry about that later, because at the end of the day, Virginia somehow shoots 39% from the floor. All that bad stuff happens and still wins this game. Scott, your response.
Wow, I mean, yeah, we nailed it. I mean, we're not exaggerating. Just that I'm sure the podcast is still up. Go back and listen to it. I mean, we kind of surmised yesterday what might have happened early on. Someone getting foul trouble. It happened. We'd have to weather some officiating calls. It happened. You know, the final stats, final fouls, totals didn't look that out of the norm. But you know, as well as I do, they not exactly when, how many they're called, but when and to whom. So, but wow, what a great, I mean, just an absolutely impressive win. You know, I read a quote on one of the tweets for, I think it was from Anthony Gill, maybe, and it said, who's go to Cameron, go into Cameron and take their lunch money. and that pretty much wraps it up. You know, I mean, the fact too, we gave up, caught up a 13-point lead, got down by four, but still maintained the composure. I mean, I didn't. I think you said earlier when we talked, you were kind of worried at that point. But you know, I really did not. I kind of thought that was going to happen. That Duke, you knew Duke was going to make a run, but you know, we never really lost our composure and stuck to the game plan on the offensive end of the floor. And of course, defensively, we just played another spectacular game. I think if I hear the phrase defense travels one more time, I'm going to blow a gasket. But, I mean, literally, it does, and it did today. And Duke held Duke to a late basket. Other than that late basket, held them to 65 points, which is about 20 below their average, 22 in the first half, Chris, 22 points. They're averaging 46 in the first half. And you know, I don't care what Krzyzewski told them, how motivational he is. What do you tell a team that is as talented as Duke that goes out for 20 minutes and is held to 22 points? What do you tell them at halftime?
Yeah, you know, and whatever he said, you know, and it wasn't just what he said. I mean, I think there was a strategic move that we saw coming, and that was what was a little frustrating to watch. You knew he was going to go 2-3 zone. Every game this season, the Dukes had a challenge dating all the way back to November, those games against Texas and Florida. You know, they got down big to those teams in that tournament. I think that was a tournament like in Hawaii or something like that. They got down big and they went to zone and slowed teams down and got them out of their rhythm, and then they can still run out of that and do what they need to do. So we knew that was coming. They don't often do it at the start of a half, and that's what Coach K did in this game. He started the second half in a zone, and so for some reason Virginia wasn't ready for that. You know, you talk about the composure, but I look at it and say, you know, at times it felt like, because of a couple of early misses, you know, Devin Hall makes the first three of the half, so you feel, hey, you know, they went zone in Virginia, passes the ball around, gets a good look and an open three. They missed a couple of threes. Then Isaiah Wilkins, you know, that's, we always talk about the soft spot of a 2-3 zone is that area right there at the foul line, maybe a foot inside the foul line, so you pass the ball there. And Wilkins has been so good at that the last few years of playing that role, whether when he gets the ball there, either he can drive to the basket, he can kick out to an open shooter on the perimeter in one of the corners, or he can hit the little jump shot himself, or even drive to the basket himself. There's four options there. But he missed a couple of those early open jumpers, and then he started pulling the string on those shots. And you know, it felt like sort of that tenseness kind of seeped out to everybody else just for a few minutes. And you know, and on the defensive end, it was so odd. You know, Duke shoots 12 of 16 in the first 10 minutes of the second half. Now they finished, I'm looking at it here, 17 of 29. So that sounds good. If you talk about the whole half, 17 of 29 is 58.6%, but they were 5 of their last 13. And so what happened was, you know, and I sense this, they maybe lost their composure in that little stretch, because Duke outscores Virginia 24-7 in the after the Devin Hall three. So at about the 10-minute mark, you know, it's only 46-42. But it does feel like, hey, if Virginia doesn't regain its composure, which they did, but if they don't, this game's going to be a 15-point Duke win. I mean, we've seen that. Duke, the games I mentioned, the Florida and Texas games, even as recently as last week against Miami, they were down 13 late and won by 8. So it felt like, I'm sure the Duke folks watching the game and the Duke players and the Duke coaching staff felt like, okay, we've got it turned around. We're good. You know, we're ready to go. But what happens then is Virginia down 46-42, everything going wrong. To say the least, for this Virginia team, they got it back. They got it right. And where they got it right, I don't want to be cliche, but they got it right on the defensive end. So after that 12 of 16 start from the field for Duke, they're 5 of 13 down the stretch. So that's, you know, if you can assert on the defensive end like Virginia did, then you open things up. You know, you get a couple of nice driving layups from DeAndre Hunter, who filled in greatly for Isaiah Wilkins, who had the 4 fouls in 14 minutes. We'll talk more about that, I'm sure, a little later. Before he went down to injury, there's more adversity. So here you go. You got the guy who's really keying you in this run. Hunter goes down, and Wilkins comes back in, and, you know, things pick back up. So, this win, I think, Scott, and I'm going to get your thoughts on this. I think this win means more because Virginia had to deal with that adversity on the road against that talented Duke team in the second half, then say, you know, the first half looked like it was going to be a blowout. I mean, you know, you're up 10, you're at one point up 12 in the first half. Hall makes that first three, you're up 13. It felt like the game was trending towards blowout. I think it's a lot more meaningful, though, that Virginia faced that terrible adversity and was able to overcome and win the game.
Well, and again, up 10 at the half, I did not feel as though that game was Virginia was going to win convincingly. I knew Duke was going to come by and make a game of it and play. It was going to be a nail biter. But, yeah, and I mean, it kind of, at the end, now that it's over with, it kind of makes you feel great to know that Virginia was able to overcome adversity, didn't hang their heads, didn't get caught up in the emotion of Cameron. And, I mean, that's a character building win. If you could have looked ahead and seen that when it was happening, we would have been a lot better, but we didn't know what was going to happen when they were losing their lead. And Duke actually, I think, took a 4. Duke led by as many as 4. Was that about that where that lead went?
I think their biggest lead was 4, yeah.
But, I'm gonna say something that I don't know if anybody would disagree, or I don't know if anybody would agree. Duke is a good ball team. I mean, Duke is good, but Virginia's better. And in my opinion, you play this game 10 times, Virginia's going to win 7 games, maybe 8 out of 10. Overall, Virginia did not play an incredibly great game offensively, overcame that defense that Duke came out with in the second half, overcame what we knew was going to happen, some one-sided officiating, particularly early in the second half, survived all that and won. And you play this game on a neutral court, and Virginia wins 8 out of 10 times.
And listen to these numbers. This is a team that grinds out a win against a good basketball team. Duke's number 4. These are the numbers for Virginia. 39.4% from the field, 35.1% in the second half. 27% from three-point range, 27% in the second half, 4 of 15 in the second half. Out-rebounded 44-31. Duke has 12 offensive rebounds in the game. Until Duke had to foul to get Virginia the foul line in the last 30 seconds, the foul discrepancy was 18-9 in favor of Duke. I mean, Virginia had 18 fouls, Duke had 9 fouls. So now here's a couple things that Virginia did well. All those things are bad because Duke shoots 48%. Now, they didn't shoot from three well either. They didn't make anything in the first half, finished 4 of 15. It was 4 of 8 in the second half. But here's what – so Duke has the big advantage in rebounding, 44-31. But second chance points, Virginia actually has a 12-10 advantage in second chance points. So even with all those offensive rebounds that Duke got, didn't get anything for them. Virginia actually, with fewer opportunities, did better. And here's the big number, and we've been talking about this all season, how interesting this is. The pack line defense is not supposed to be a turnover prone, a turnover forcing defense. Duke has 16 turnovers in this game. Virginia just 5 turnovers in this game. And that 16-5 discrepancy, Virginia has a 14-4 advantage in points off turnover. So, you know, second chance point, that was the big fear I had. When I did my keys to the game, I thought we would play better defensively in the post. If you don't have Isaiah Wilkins on the floor, it's going to be hard to do. Bagley has 30. Carter has 14. That's 44 of their 63 points. What Virginia did was they shut down the guards. But I thought, okay, shut down the post. Shut down. Duke's going to have the advantage on rebounding. And this game comes down to who does a little bit better job. Well, actually, as it turns out, I mean, their post guys are a combined 19 of 29 from the floor, 44 points, 29 rebounds, and they still lost to a Virginia team that shot 39%. Scott, these numbers just don't make any sense to me.
No, they do not. You look at those. I'm looking at what you just read, and I'm trying to. I mean, we're both analyst type geeks, and I'm having to kind of wipe my eyes because there's something's not adding up. Something's not adding up out there on what we're looking at, and what is it?
The only thing is the turnovers, and Virginia only committing 5 turnovers, and so a 16-5 discrepancy in turnovers. You know, there were 66 possessions in this game. That's about midway point. Virginia averages 60 possessions a game. Duke averages 72, so 66 is obviously right down the middle of the possession. So nobody really dictated pace. I mean, they came back to Virginia's style a little bit more, but then they had to play faster than they normally do, so Duke gets a little bit of advantage. But 16 turnovers on 66 possessions, that's about a quarter of your possessions. And so that's 1-4. So as a result, Duke, instead of having 66 chances to score, has 50 chances to score. Now, they scored 27 field goals. They only shot 5 of 11 from the foul line. But, except for turnovers. And now, so the defense on the post wasn't what it could have been, should have been. Because Isaiah Wilkins played 3 minutes in the first half. He had 2 fouls. You and I both said that was going to happen. He finishes with 4 fouls in 14 minutes. But what Virginia was able to do was they slowed him down enough. DeAndre Hunter then, he did his best. I mean, the kid is 6'7", 210 pounds. He did his best trying to guard Marvin Bagley III in the post. And he did enough of a job slowing him down just enough that – what Hunter was then able to give Virginia on offense, especially in the second half, when he played in that role there. After Wilkins struggled early in the second half, Hunter came in, actually had all – let's see here. He had 8 points in the second half on 4 of 8 shooting. In the first half, he and Ty Jerome had a neat little backdoor play working from the high post. He had a couple of assists to Jerome early, so – But, it's a kind of a broken record. But once again, DeAndre Hunter comes up big for this team. And, Devin Hall, 14 points, 8 rebounds in 39 minutes. Kyle Guy kind of had one of those games where you look up and you see he has 17 points and you don't really realize. He had 10 in the first half, only had to shoot the ball 4 times to get 10 points. Hit a big 3 with 3:20 to go to give us that 5-point lead, a little bit of breathing room at that stretch, a very key basket there. Jerome had the big 3 with 39 seconds left once again extend the lead back out to 5. But they're perimeter guys. Trevon Duval, 6 points, 3 of 7 shooting. He had 8 assists, but just 6 points. Gary Trent Jr., 8 points, 3 of 11 shooting. Grayson Allen, 5 points, 2 of 8 shooting. So, it seems like whether this was the intent or not, that what Tony Bennett said today was, okay, your big guys will do what they do. We're not going to let you get open threes and beat us that way. And it worked.
Yeah, we talked yesterday on our podcast. We kind of said, hey, look out. Don't be surprised. Some starter for Virginia is going to get in early foul trouble. It happened. Isaiah Wilkins, he only ended up playing 14 minutes. We also said, don't be surprised if Jack Salt's minutes, we both said upper 20s, maybe even 30.
Yeah.
How many minutes did Jack Salt have tonight? 33. 3 for 3 from field goal. from the field, 3 for 3. But I'm looking at that stat sheet, that box, final box, and boy, look at Ty Jerome's night. 13 points, 7 assists, yeah. 1 turnover, 3 steals. Ty Jerome is my offensive player of the game.
Yeah, and because and he's the one, you know, the points and assists and everything else, he was the guy, even outside of that, who seemed to just keep things calmed down. And you mentioned the one turnover. I mean, I'm looking at the list here. We only had 5 turnovers. Nobody had more than one turnover. Hall had one. Guy had one. Jerome had one. Wilkins had one. And Diakite had one. And so, you know, if you're going to beat a team like Duke, you have to – now, Virginia didn't shoot great. They shot less than 40%, but, you know, they had more chances. When you only have 5 turnovers in a game, that means 61 chances to score, when Duke only had 50 chances to score with all their turnovers. And so, you know, you make the most of your situation. You know, I look at you know, Hall had that another quiet assassin kind of game, the 14 points, 8 rebounds. But Hunter, once again, you know, and you know, now we have to wait and see with bated breath. You know, he went down, he landed on a guy. He had a 3-pointer in the first half where he on his follow through, he landed on the defender's foot, and he got back up and played, and didn't seem any worse for the wear. And in the second half, it was about the 5-minute mark, he made that nice driving layup when the shot clock was running down, landed on a guy's foot. Seemed like the sideline reporter for CBS was talking about how he was able to jump off both feet, but when he jumped off one foot, it was, you know, not quite the same, and so they taped him up. Let's presume he's you know, we've all turned an ankle playing basketball. It's, there's 3 days between now and the game Wednesday night with Louisville, because you don't want to see, you know, anything. Obviously, that's the first thing I was thinking was, well, one, we want to win the game, but two, you know, thinking about the Justin Anderson broken pinky from a few years ago that ruined that team season. So Hunter's a big guy, but he had a big game defensively, offensively, and, you know, even Nigel Johnson didn't do anything in the scorebook. He had no points, 0 of 1 from the floor, 9 minutes. But there were some times in that, in especially in the first half, they brought him in just to kind of settle things down, and he's in the second half too. He had a little stretch where, he was in there when Duke was playing full court press. He was able to help beat the press. So, this was a true team win for this Virginia team today. It seemed like everybody contributed, whether they scored, rebounded, or just played some valuable defensive minutes. Everybody had a role in this win.
Yeah, and I mean, that's just the blueprint. That's the foundation of UVA basketball. Now, here's a statement. I'm going to start it off by saying, and this was the game breaker, this was the game changer, Duke gets 0 points from its bench. Well, that's probably not that big a surprise. They're not deep. They get 0 points. UVA gets 12, or actually gets 14, but 12 of those came from Hunter. Diakite had the other basket. But if you look at here's the thing. If you look at that, if you again, being analytics-type people, okay, so Duke gets 0 points, Virginia gets 14, but one of Virginia's bench players, DeAndre Hunter, is equivalent to a starter. Uh-huh. But if you go down and look, the last line of that stat column, Virginia's bench played 43 minutes. Duke's bench played 6 minutes.
Yeah, and their starters went the entire second half. Their starters went that entire second half. Delorier and O'Connell only got 3 minutes basically between TV timeouts in the first half. And, yeah, you have to wonder what impact that has. You know, Duke fizzled down the stretch. They had the lead. They were 12 of 16 to start the half shooting. They're 5 of 13 to finish. Yeah, you have to wonder, you know, that's the dice you roll when you only want to play 5 guys. That when they play a team as deep as Virginia and as talented as Virginia and as tough to play as Virginia defensively, especially, yeah, that's probably a factor. Fatigue down the stretch probably a big factor for Duke.
I can't imagine it not be. I mean, Duke had 3 players that played the entire game. The other two, Duvall and Carter. Played 37, so I mean, yeah, especially playing a team that just grinds you, possession, not just possession after possession, but I mean, they challenge every pass, and you know, we've heard some analogies to that, like it's like going to the dentist. Jay Billis said playing Virginia was like going to the dentist, waiting in the lobby, waiting in the waiting room without Wi-Fi or any magazines for 2 hours. I mean, you know, it's just, it's got to be a grueling situation, and I don't, you know, can't say for certain, but it has to play somewhat of a factor on the opponent wearing them down as the game wears on.
And especially for their guards against when they play Virginia, when Virginia has the ball on offense, the guards on defense have to run through screens constantly. And you look at their guard numbers, Duval, Trent Jr., and Allen combined 8 of 26 from the floor. They played 117 minutes. Duval got 3 minutes of bench time. But 8 of 26 from the floor, just 19 points from those three guys. I mean, you know, if you get anything from your guards, obviously it ends up being a two-point game. So you get anything from your guards if you're Duke. In fact, you look at this number too. I mean, Duke's 4 of 15 from three-point range. Two of those makes were by Bagley. So one was by Carter, that little flip that they ended up counting, you know, where he was trying to pass the ball to Bagley, where they called a foul, and then they allowed the three-pointer to go in. So, I mean, Duke's guards made 1 3. Their two big guys made 3 threes. Duke got nothing from its perimeter, and that's what Virginia does. They didn't do it in the post today, but they grinded down those perimeter guys, and maybe that's how all this these numbers that don't make sense otherwise. 39% from the floor, getting out rebounded 44-31. That's one of those ways that makes sense. You just killed those guys on the perimeter for Duke, and they had off days. Probably their worst games of the season today.
Oh, absolutely. Held them to, I was looking at some of the KenPom, held them to 1 point per possession. Held their guards were 8 for 27. I mean, these are just unreal. These are like video game stats that you've learned the codes for, you know, that you just don't see this in college basketball. They're just setting the bar so high that they may never be able to reach this again. So we have here's the one thing we also talked about, you know, the officiating that we predicted. The one thing that we did not talk about yesterday about the officiating, and I was a little disappointed in that late in the game, that I felt like the officials should have definitely ended the game when Kyle Guy landed the right or the left elbow to the it should have been a TKO right there on Grayson Allen.
Well, it's an interesting point. I mean, because Allen obviously flopped, and he's Grayson Allen, that's what he does. He's trying to get a cheap technical foul called on the flagrant, what would be a flagrant if they called it. They went and reviewed it. I mean, there were a couple of frustrating things. That one, you know, the officials originally did not want to review that play. Guess who talked them into reviewing that play? We all know who talked them into reviewing that play. And then that three-pointer I mentioned, the one that where Carter was trying to throw the ball to Bagley in the post, and there was a foul called on the post defender. And, you know, when we went to commercial break, that was not a three-pointer. And then we came back after Krzyzewski jawed at the officials for 3 minutes. We got 3 points for Duke. So, I mean, you know, we talked about that yesterday too, Scott. We did. You know, this foul discrepancy happened as we said it would. A key Virginia player, Wilkins in this case, getting cheap fouls, having to sit on the bench for a long time. That happened as we said it would, and Coach K talked his team into, well, he got him 3 points on that what was originally not going to be a 3-point play, and then he almost got his team a cheap flagrant foul when they were tackling Kyle Guy in the corner. So, I mean, shame on the ACC. You know, we all knew going into this game that this was going to be a situation where the ACC was going to make sure that Duke got a chance to win this game, whether they deserved a two on the floor or not. It played out that way. Maybe that's even sweeter, though, for Virginia, because they beat Duke and the ACC today, so heck with them all.
Yeah, and he's getting in the broad spectrum of the college basketball world, just scatter shooting around the site, he's getting a lot of negative publicity on that, especially when he pretty much refused. Cal Guy reached down to help him up, and he basically acted like a little crybaby and wouldn't have anything to do with it. And that's not playing well out. That's not playing out very well for him either. So what a could not ask for a better day.
You could not. And then this didn't have anything to do with this game, but 8 miles away, UNC loses in Chapel Hill to NC State. And they flashed the graphic up on the screen at the end of the game, of the Virginia-Duke game. First time since 1973 that both on the same day Duke and UNC lose at home. Now, so if you're a Virginia fan listening, which obviously 25 minutes into this postgame podcast, you're a Virginia fan and you're reveling in it just like we are, there's no better day than when Duke and Carolina both lose and when Virginia has something to do with that one. And actually, it's even more meaningful when it's Duke these days. It used to be when we beat Carolina, it was more meaningful. But in the last several years, it's gotten so much more so when it's Duke. You know, the game there 2 years ago where Brogdon made a layup with about 10 seconds to go, and then Allen took six steps and got the little jump shot to go through at the buzzer. I mean, things like dating back even to the, 96 game where, the clock situation happened and they let Wojciechowski shoot free throws and the game was over. I mean, there have been so many of those things with Duke that when you overcome a good team in their place, and you overcome what feels like a stacked deck with the officials, and you win the game, and you're 20-1. This is a good day to be a Virginia fan, and we got a few days to let this sink in, I guess.
And we're going to revel in this, and hopefully, I guess here we go. We're not true typical UVA fans unless we try to spot that gray cloud somewhere. And I guess the gray cloud in this, so let's hope that it's just a sprain for DeAndre and he maybe sets out the Louisville game and we get him back. Let's hope it's nothing else, nothing more serious than that, because, he's become a pretty integral part of this team.
Yeah, I'm actually hopeful, as someone myself who, and Scott played a lot of competitive pickup ball like I did for years too. I sprained ankles many, many times. Sometimes it doesn't hurt, and then you go back home, and it could be long term. And sometimes it hurts like crazy when you do it, and you're back out there 10 minutes later. And so the game was kind of at the end, and Hunter didn't get back in the game. But I like to think that if he needed to, he'd have been back out there. Let's hope we see him Wednesday night. And I don't know what. I don't want this podcast to end. Unfortunately, it does have to end. But Scott and I will, and you, let's go paint the town orange and blue wherever you are, because we deserve it. I feel like we all sort of had something to do. In a way, we all were nervously sitting, watching, and screaming at the TV and everything else. So I think we deserve a chance, Scott. I mean, for all UVA fans out there, let's go out and celebrate this.
Yeah, and you know what? I'm not going to toot our own horns so much, but I am going to toot our own horns, because I don't think there's many people listening that were in JPJ at around 5 o'clock on a Wednesday afternoon about 8 years ago or 9 years ago, 10 years ago, whatever it was, when we were playing a CBI game against Bradley University.
Yeah.
And we stuck with them, and we could very well be the number one team in the nation come Monday afternoon.
Yeah, it'd be the first time since 1982. I've got the headline ready to go. I'm just ready to push the button on that. So,
real quick question: do they drop? I know we're running short, but does Villanova drop even with a win? Is this win that impressive that we surpass Villanova, or do you not drop a team? Does a team not drop from number one unless they actually lose?
It's rare that there could be an argument made for the two to jump the one, even with the scenario you laid out there without the number one team losing. But I think what at the least Virginia's been getting one or two first place votes in the polls the last couple weeks. I mean, you're going to see that number go up significantly, because, and no offense to Villanova, you play the teams that are on your schedule ahead of you, so you play who you play. But between those two teams, this is the most impressive win for either team this season, a win at Duke. And so, you beat number four in their place. They were preseason number one, preseason conference favorite. The argument can certainly be made that if ever this would happen, at this stage of a season too, that if ever this would happen, it would be now. So, you know, that's something for us, you know, something for us to chew on the next couple of days, waiting to see what will happen there, because it may very well, I don't know, I think it's worth exploring. Maybe I'll write a column on that tomorrow, just to have something for us to revel in a little bit more. I think it's a great question. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't think they will. I think what will happen is they'll narrow the total point. It will be narrowed. It'll be a very close first. And I think, of course, if Villanova wins, they play at Marquette. And, hey, you know, Marquette, hey, we could be talking about the irony of this. Who coaches Marquette?
Yeah. Good point.
You know, so for once in our life, we're going to be rooting for an ex-Duke player to have a good day tomorrow. But I don't look for Villanova to win, but I think what will happen is Monday, the gap between Virginia and Villanova will narrow considerably. It'll be Villanova by, you know, a few votes, and that'll be about it. I don't see us going to number one unless Villanova just plays horribly and still has a way to finds a way to win. That's about the only scenario I see that we overtake them.
Well, it's something to watch tomorrow, 1 o'clock tip. Maybe tune in about 2:30 or so if you got nothing else going on tomorrow. You're still kind of watching UVA basketball without having any other rooting interest, so that should be fun. So Scott and I will get back together, of course, I mean, for Wednesday night's game with Louisville. I mean, now, gosh, you know, we haven't thought about that, but that's another tough one. Louisville's only lost two in the conference, and so Louisville comes to town. Yeah, exactly. Well, just previewing the fact that that's the next game, and it's a few days away. That's Wednesday. It's way out there. So, let's let this sink in for a couple of days. And I know Scott and I are going to, and I know you will as well. So, for Scott German, I'm Chris Graham signing off. Wahoo, wah, Virginia 65, Duke 63.